Welcome to Pink Door Culture Club. It's great you can be joining. My name is Jeremiah Burns, and this week we're kicking off season two of Pink Door Culture Club with a look at the 2023 film Leave the World Behind, directed by Sam Esmail, who created Mr. Robot, and starring Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, and Mahershala Ali. Now, this is a movie based on the novel by Rumman Alam. It reminded me a lot of Don't Look Up, another Netflix film from 2021. It has similar kind of apocalyptic, end-of-the-world vibes, but less zany, less kind of funny and comic, and a fair bit more dark and brooding. It has had some similar mixed reviews, and I'll be talking through my thoughts on the film, so there will be a fair bit of spoilers ahead, so an alert on that. A new season means we're trying some new things. This just used to be a podcast, but what I'm going to do is try and basically publish this as a podcast and as a YouTube video on the YouTube channel every week as well, so you can either watch or you can listen each week, and the plan is to release episodes every Friday Australian time. The Pink Door Culture Club is based in Australia, here in Melbourne, Australia. If you like the show, please make sure you like and subscribe and you share and you comment and all of that, blah, blah, blah. And feel free to be in touch either via the Facebook page, or you can email me at pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. The first segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Spellbound, where we think about some of the strengths and the weaknesses of Leave the World Behind. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was just the range of themes that are explored via the experience of a single household. And it is a household, not just a family, because the plot involves sort of an Airbnb setup where the visitors and the owners are together as part of a single household. It reminded me of the M. Night Shyamalan movie Signs, which stars Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix. And in that movie, there's kind of this global, more of a science fiction crisis, and the whole thing is kind of experienced from within a house, eventually experienced from within a basement. And I actually really like Signs, and it's amazing that M. Night is able to tell such a global story just using that household and a bit of what's happening on TV and radio and a few other things. But in this movie, in Leave the World Behind, the kind of themes that are being explored just from that single household include urbanization versus nature, work, or the nature and the experience of the modern workplace, big theme around technology and its impact on humanity, a big theme around race relations and racial tensions, particularly in the US, political division at the national level in the US, but also at the international level, the role of violence in that kind of situation, as well as the different roles that we can play within a family, particularly the voices of children. So I thought it was quite like an expansive list of themes that are covered off in this movie. The second thing that I liked about this movie, or that was interesting, was the pacing of it and the space in the script and in the dialogue. You know, rather than rushing, there is a lot of room to breathe and think. There's a lot of people sitting around the pool, people sitting around in, you know, dining rooms having a chat about what might have happened, what will happen, how did we get here, what's going to happen next, what did we hope for our lives, etc. It is extremely different to a disaster movie like The Day After Tomorrow, or even a more recent one like Greenland on Amazon Prime, which are like really kind of, you know, once the action starts, it doesn't stop, and, you know, everyone's running around kind of, without any time to really stop and breathe and think. it's very different, for example, to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which again is heavy on, you know, as you would expect, heavy on the action. This did remind me, as I said at the start, of Don't Look Up, but with even more extended dialogue. I think it kind of borders on being a play at times, like a play set in a house. It gets outside of that setting, but that's largely where it's based. It reminded me of another 2023 film called The Killer, which is extremely sparse and has a lot of inner monologue as part of it. And also Better Call Saul, where you get, you know, some sort of extended character studies and dialogue between those characters. Sometimes it's too slow. Like sometimes it does plod along a bit too much. But overall, given how frantic modern movies are, I actually liked the overall pace. I liked the slow dialogue, and you know, it gives you time to think about what they're saying and what it might mean. So I thought that was a strong point. Another strong point was the way that they use parallel plot points to build tension. So in particular, kind of in the middle of the movie, the character of GH is off at a neighbor's property. He's looking for some satellite phones. At the same time, Clay, the father figure, he's off, you know, trying to find out what's going on in the local neighborhood. And then the kids are in the shed. And, you know, with GH, he's doing the investigation of the property and he realizes all the planes from the airport are crashing into the beach right there. Clay is suddenly confronted with a woman who's speaking Spanish and obviously desperate for help. And he's really kind of not sure what to do. And in the shed, the brother is telling this sort of spooky story to the sister. And they really build that, put those parallel sort of little stories very quickly and escalate the tension, I think, really well. So I thought that was a great moment. And there's a couple of other moments that are similar to that in the movie. Some things I didn't like about this movie was, you know, sometimes I felt like their reactions to things weren't very realistic. Sometimes they were super realistic. Like if someone turned up at your house when you're in the middle of a holiday and said, hey, we own this house, can we come and stay in the basement? Like you might be a bit uncertain about what to do in that situation. So they kind of capture that well. But then they're at the beach and this massive oil tanker is drawing closer and closer to the beach. They show that really well. And then it just like plows into the beach and like, you know, everyone has to run for their lives. And they kind of just go, oh, that was a bit dramatic, and then go back to their holiday house. I feel like that would warrant a slightly bigger response, and it would be a bigger source of concern. Like they might try and get home after that because, you know, clearly something's going wrong with the world. but it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, on with the holiday. Another thing I didn't really like was just, you know, here and there, I felt like they slipped into some unhelpful stereotypes. So Kevin Bacon plays Danny, and Danny is paranoid. He's selfish. He's a gun-toting loner prepper kind of guy. And of course, he drives a ute or a pickup truck. And what is he wearing? He's wearing a Dallas Cowboys baseball hat. And I don't know. I just found myself thinking, like, what is the message this is sending to Republicans or to people who live in Texas or to the South, especially when Barack Obama and Michelle Obama are executive producers? I don't know, maybe Barack's just a massive Chicago Bears fan in the NFL and he wanted to say something about the Cowboys. You know, and to be fair to him, he didn't have a great time trying to reach across the aisle, you know, when he was in power. And the film does show everyone is capable of selfish, or a lot of other characters is capable of selfish. So you've got Julia Roberts' character, you know, Amanda, she's kind of doubting GH, doubting that he could afford a place like that. You've got Clay really running away from the housekeeper in need. I think that's a really gripping moment where he's just like, well, you know, you clearly need help. You're clearly a human in need, but you know what? I just don't want the complication. And you also have GH's daughter, the character of Ruth, being like pretty aggressive and argumentative, and also not showing a lot of faith in humanity as well. But I guess I just think by putting Danny in a Dallas hat, I think it kind of misses an opportunity to be more subtle and thoughtfully engage that whole audience in the story, rather than giving them something to react to, which is what I think they will, you know, they're likely to do. All right. You know, probably my biggest issue with this film is just the clumsy attempts at explaining what is going on. Like, some of it works really well. Like, you get these little glimpses of the TV news glitching out, and there's sort of hints of there being a cyber attack. You get the ship crashing into the beach, which is done well, even though the reaction seems quite unrealistic. You get, I think, a really, you know, spooky vibe from the deer who keeps showing up on the edge of the garden, sometimes in huge numbers. So, like, that's done well. And the kind of people speculating, like, what is it, and there being conflicting views on what's gone wrong, I think that works well. But then you kind of, they stray into, like, these little monologues from GH, the GH character, especially at the end, where it's kind of like they felt, well, you know, we haven't really explained what's going on now. Quick, let's put in a minute or two while they're sitting in the car together and he'll explain what's probably happening. You know, I think it would have been better to either have a really tight, compelling explanation or have no explanation. Like in the book and the movie of The Road, you know, the main character and his son are just trapped in this apocalyptic wasteland. And one of the things that's compelling is there is no real explanation for how they got there. That's just the reality they have to deal with. But this movie kind of gets stuck in between. There's no real explanation of what's going on. And there's not that kind of, there's not enough ambiguity. And so I kind of feel like that trips it up somewhat. All right, so those are some of the things that I loved or liked about this film and some of the things I didn't like so much. Okay, so the second segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Rear Window. And the idea is to look more closely and think more deeply about the meaning or some of the meaning of Leave the World Behind, or you know, just reflect on some of those themes in more detail. So obviously the big one is how humans respond to stress, how we respond in a crisis, that instinct to suspicion and doubt and division and exploitation, and you know, even just at the level of a marriage, temptation to unfaithfulness in the midst of stress and crisis. You know, and the way in which some forms of work can encourage and reinforce that mindset, like Amanda, Julia Roberts' character, she kind of has all those thoughts around how she's kind of been trained to think in terms of exploiting other people through her work. And also the way in which stress can mean we stop listening to others, like we get that tunnel focus and so we don't listen to others, especially perhaps to children or to those who are weak or powerless, even if they have great insights like Rose does. Like she notices, hey, something's kind of going on here with the deer, like maybe we should be concerned. And she says, I feel like no one's listening to me. And her brother's like, yeah, no one is listening to you, which is realistic, but maybe speaks to like a general societal thing about not listening to some people, and particularly in times of stress. Also I was thinking as I was watching this movie about the way in which stress and crisis means we want to get away, right? Like the city is bad, and so we kind of want to get away. We've got to get away from other people. We've got to hoard things. Again, that's kind of that self-protective measure that we can feel, that reaction, that instinct that we can feel. And also the way in which politics can play into that and encourage division on both sides. So conservatives, as you know, I guess in this movie they are portrayed somewhat, like I said, as ignorant and paranoid and violent and selfish, but the elites or the progressives in this movie are also shown as being arrogant and hypocritical and just as prone to some of those things as well. Again, like with Ethan Hawke's character, Clay, just basically refusing to harbor a refugee, essentially, and saying, like, you got to fend for yourself. I'm taking care of my family. And it made me think about our experience during COVID where, you know, there was lots of good things, right? But there were people fighting in the supermarket over toilet paper, and the home became a refuge, but also a fortress to some extent, like a rise in domestic violence and racial vilification. So, you know, when you put that stress on a society and a family, you do see the bad side of people as well as the good. And the good, you know, comes out in this movie as well, the trust and the collaboration. And I think the symbol of the TV show Friends is sort of there, talking to that somewhat. You know, how do you cross those boundaries of where the battle lines have been placed? What does it look like to have your own community, or have a community, a network that isn't just this sort of monocultural reflection of everything you believe and your own ideas? It's a more resilient community than that. You know, for me, that's the physical workplace, getting into the physical workplace, being on public transport. It's sporting clubs. It's the local neighborhood. It's the church. It's places where I'm meeting people and talking with people and having dialogue with people from walks of life I normally wouldn't choose to or wouldn't have to or whatever. And so that's actually building up that sense of community and network. It does kind of raise the question of what else can overcome seemingly permanent and deep-seated hostility. Like what, for example, is capable of healing what seems to be just these tremendous divisions in countries like the US and elsewhere? A second thing I was thinking about while I was watching this movie is our dependence on technology. You know, its immense power and potential versus the way in which it actually makes us weak and makes us vulnerable as well. Because there is this, you know, there's always been and always will be this narrative about technology as the savior of humanity, the savior of the world. I remember, you know, as the internet became a thing, you know, it was all about how information was going to democratize everything and education was going to become free for all, and you know, you would have this whole new nirvana. But instead you've just got new empires, you've got echo chambers, you've got new forms of exploitation, which you see in the movie a bit with Archie photographing Ruth at the swimming pool, kind of at a micro scale, and there's sort of hints of disinformation and misinformation from enemy states as well in the film. And I think now it's kind of, there's a view that, you know, AI, from some, that AI is going to solve all the world's problems, you know, but also recognition that maybe it's actually a massive threat as well. And that comes up in the movie, like the Tesla scene, you know, what are we automating and who is actually in control of that automation? Some person or corporation or set of values is responsible for automating those things. You know, something that disturbs me a bit at the moment is that a lot of the AI guys, and they mostly are guys, are like getting into anti-aging technology and this sort of view that we can live for a lot longer and maybe eventually forever. Like, to me, that's just sort of smacks of, you know, that unrealistic expectations and ideas we have about technology, and just feels like they haven't learned anything from the way this plays out in history every single time. You know, and technology, instead of being those things, instead of being the savior of everything, is something that's good, but it's flawed, right? Like, it amplifies both human goodness and evil. I was thinking as I was watching the movie about online threats. Like, at the personal level, we're seeing this explosion of scams and disinformation. And at the political level, you're seeing it play out now in elections and cyber attacks. Like, it's a great theme to be making a movie about because it's very, very current. And, you know, Kevin Bacon is kind of presented, his character, Danny, is presented as a a kind of loony kind of character on the one hand, and yet Clay says to him, like, you were actually ready. Like, you're kind of smarter than me. Like, you were actually ready. And it, the movie did make me think about the value of preparation and redundancy and practical skills. You see, I guess, and you're starting to see that, I think, play out, like, politically, like a shift towards moving manufacturing back onshore. You're seeing corporations try and pull their supply chains in more tightly as well. And I don't know, just at a family household level, it makes me think, like, do I have any water in reserve, any food, any medicine in reserve? Do I know how to make anything practical? Do I know how to repair things? And there's a whole movement towards that, right? A kind of reaction against total dependency on technology. And there's some wisdom in there without getting into the complete paranoia of the worst of prepping, which can seemingly rob you of all joy and just leave you worried about the future. A third thing I was thinking about during this film or afterwards was the extent to which something like this is reflecting on versus reinforcing fears for the future. So part of the job of films and art is to express our hopes and our dreams, but also our fears, right? And to serve as a warning. And so in the Cold War, you know, plenty of films did that. You know, they warned about nuclear war. I've recently watched some old movies, Failsafe and On the Beach. And, you know, those are pretty bleak films, kind of saying, well, if we do this wrong, we will risk nuclear apocalypse. Now those fears are kind of more connected to automation and, you know, artificial intelligence, and also what's happening in the natural world. It's interesting that Elon Musk says that he made the Cybertruck bulletproof because our world currently has an apocalyptic vibe. You know, it's, I mean, he's a bit crazy, and that's a bit of a crazy comment, but, like, he's probably right. Like, there is a sense in which we all feel that. And I mean, his response is to create a bulletproof truck. I'm not sure that's the right response, but it's interesting that is something, especially after COVID, that's in, you know, in the culture, I guess. So to what extent does this kind of film, this kind of art, does it reflect or explain the popular mood and lead to preventative action versus actually reinforcing it and creating a sense of inevitability where what actually happens is we don't act? Like some of what I hear about global warming or China versus US over Taiwan, like at some point we've talked so much of it, it's almost like we've talked ourselves into it. It just seems inevitable. Rather than something we could possibly change. And I think that the best reading of this film is to say, no, you know, this is a warning, but we can work together against it. But, you know, another legitimate reading would be to say that what it's saying is, look, this is going to happen. We can cross some boundaries within our community. We can give each other a hug to make it a bit more bearable. But in the end, Dallas Cowboys fans are always going to be like this, and we just need to find a bunker and watch the chaos from afar. Like, that's like a possible reading of this film. And I guess more generally, I reckon the human interest that Elon Musk is picking up on, like that human interest in the end of the world, does raise interesting questions about the extent to which we all know and feel that our lives are temporary, and even that our world is temporary, and what our hope for the future is beyond this world. Okay, a fourth thing I was thinking about and a final thing that I was thinking about during this film and afterwards was this unusual period of peace that we've experienced in the West. Like in the film, like I said, Friends is used as a bit of a symbol of, you know, this peaceful period in the 90s. You know, Rose is obsessed with it. Now, Ruth is far more critical and says, look, Friends is nostalgia for a time that never existed. And, you know, certainly, like, even just in recent years with like 9/11 and COVID and Ukraine, let alone all sorts of conflicts across Africa, Asia, the Middle East, you know, there's all sorts of terrible things going on all the time. But compared in the West, compared to the, US Civil War, World War One, World War Two. Like, this has been a pretty amazing period of stability in the West. And it just made me think about the value of appreciating that, of being thankful for that without being naively nostalgic. It's something I want to do post-COVID, and I've tried to do post-COVID, is like not forget just how disruptive COVID was, how many things it robbed society of, just in terms of even being able to get together with other people and, you know, maintain the resolve to now take every opportunity to do that and make the most of it, because you never know when you won't be able to. Like, we've all had that experience now, even just in recent times. All right, the final segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called The Man Who Knew Too Much. And this is just where I list off a couple of points of trivia about the movie or the music that we're dealing with in a particular episode. So here are a few things related to Leave the World Behind. So number one, you know, obviously, as we've said, the concept of the natural world as an early warning sign of trouble, that's prominent in the movie. Like, you've got the deer in particular who are always on the fringe, and you've got birds as well behaving strangely. One thing I didn't know and didn't pick up on is that in the bedroom in the film, there is a painting on the wall. It's a picture of waves, and that painting changes during the course of the film with the tide, the tide actually rising. So something to look out for on your next watch through. A second thing is, yeah, as we've talked about, technology is a huge theme in the film, and GH's neighbor, his last name is Huxley, which is obviously a reference to Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World and other novels and they were all about, you know, dystopia and, you know, the way in which we might have technology that seems harmless but in fact causes all sorts of grief for humanity in the end. And another massive theme that we've talked about is race relations, very prominent in the film. And the name of the oil tanker when they're at the beach is the White Lion. And the frequency of the radio station in Clay's car when he's driving is 1619. And the reference there is to the White Lion, which was the first ship to bring African slaves to English colonies in 1619. So there you go. A couple of references and bits and pieces to look out for next time you're watching through. So we're at the end of this episode of the Pink Door Culture Club, the first one for season two. Overall, I really liked Leave the World Behind. I liked it more than I didn't. It built and maintained tension all the way through the film. It made me think about some big ideas. Like, it is flawed, but it's still a film I would recommend, and it's still a film I would rewatch as well. Now, as I mentioned at the top, I'm going to have a crack at publishing this show as a video to YouTube, as well as a regular podcast on all the normal channels. So check out the YouTube channel if you're more of a viewer than a listener. However you're engaging, make sure you like and you share and you comment and you subscribe and you whatever else you're meant to do and whatever else I'm meant to say. I'm also going to have a go at a series of short videos called Pop Culture Life Lessons, where I'm going to like try and pull out one or two, you know, little bits and pieces from whatever film or music we're looking at, where there might be like a practical life lesson, you know, not take it too seriously, but something fun for during the week as well. I'm also in the process of refreshing the Pink Door Culture Club website and all the other social channels as well. And I'll provide some updates as we go this season. Feel free to be in touch with me via the Facebook page, which is a public page, or you can email me at pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.